Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
On June 25th, 2023, 39-year-old Amber Arnett was last seen in Lansing, Michigan. Surveillance footage captured her shopping with a friend before she was dropped off at a gated property where she had been staying. After that, Amber was never seen or heard from again. More than 2.5 years later, her disappearance remains an open case. Amber has not been found, and her family and community are still waiting for answers. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So, if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. Okay, Amber Arnett, this is going to be an interesting case to talk about. I think for a lot of you, you're going to come to some conclusions about this case. We have a lot of information to talk about. In fact, Amber's mother, Marty, worked with us on this episode. So thank you to Marty for allowing us to tell your daughter's story, as you will find in this episode. Marty is basically the lead detective on this case, so she has a lot of insight to share. One of the things I want to talk about before we dive into the episode is Amber and some of the decisions she made. As you will see, she didn't always make the right choices, but I don't want anyone to sit here and judge her for those decisions, because one thing that I always implemented as an investigator, and it served me very well, was to always treat people with dignity and respect, regardless of why I was interacting with them, even if they were a quote-unquote criminal. And that was because I always took the approach of, even though people may commit a crime, sometimes good people make bad decisions. And it doesn't necessarily mean they're a bad person at the core. And because I took that approach, what it allowed me to do was gain information in other investigations to help solve those cases, because people trusted me and they remembered how they were treated when they were going through a bad time by me. And they essentially wanted to share information with me that would assist in my case. And that was their way of thanking me. And it helped me out a lot. In fact, it actually saved my life. And I'm not being hyperbolic here. It really did. I had a case where there was someone who was really down on their luck. Unfortunately, I had to arrest them, but I treated them well. I treated their family well and checked in on them from time to time when they got out of prison. And this person went back to prison on an unrelated charge. But while they were in there, there was a group of people who were planning to kill me. There was a hit put out on me. And this person was involved in that conversation. Just they were there listening. And so that individual got a letter to the correctional officers, which was then sent to me at the police station. And we were able to get the jump on it, where I was able to get myself and my family out of my house before anything bad happened. And And ultimately, that's a whole different story where it went and how it ultimately ended. I wrote about it in my book. If you want to check it out, I know some people ask me, it's called The Undercover Edge. And I wrote about this at length, but the short version is because of the way I treated them when they were not at their best, they had a choice to either remain silent or put themselves in a risky situation and help me. And fortunately, they chose the latter. And that's why I'm here with you guys today. So again, you treat people with kindness. Not all criminals are bad people. Sometimes they're good people who are just in tough places making bad decisions. And I truly believe that's what was going on here with Amber. I think at the core, she was an amazing woman, but she was down on her luck and she had some childhood trauma that definitely impacted her in adulthood. And we're going to talk about that as well. So I just wanted to put that out there, not only as we talk about Amber's case, but we talk about cases in the future where maybe our victims don't have the cleanest past and might have made some bad decisions that put them in potentially dangerous situations. Regardless of those circumstances, we're going to treat everyone like human beings. Everyone deserves justice, Amber, her family, her friends, and every other case that we cover. So that's my approach. I hope it's yours as well. And like I said, we have a lot to cover tonight. I don't want to waste any more time. Let's dive into this week's case. Amber Arnett was born on January 5th, 1984 in Lansing, Michigan to her mother, Marty, who I've already told you worked with us on this episode. She grew up in the area with her younger brother, who was about a year and a half younger than her. Amber spent her childhood surrounded by extended family. She and her brother were close with her grandparents and cousins, and those relationships were constant in her life throughout adulthood. As a child, Amber was outgoing and social. She enjoyed music, arts and crafts, and being around people. She was talkative, colorful, and always around friends. Those who knew her described her as loyal and generous to the core. Amber also did well academically until she reached high school. Then she started acting out and hanging out with the wrong crowd. Marty explained to us that her behavior stemmed from unresolved childhood trauma. When Amber was around 6 years old, her parents divorced. During that time, Amber told Marty that her father had been sexually abusing her. Marty contacted the police, and Amber's father was eventually arrested and convicted. He spent much of Amber's life incarcerated. According to her family, Amber blamed herself for what had happened, despite the fact that she was the victim. As she got older, that trauma began to surface in unhealthy ways. Family members said that Amber struggled with boundaries and was often too loyal to people who did not treat her well. As a coping mechanism, Amber developed a serious problem with alcohol. When Amber was drinking, her behavior could change significantly. While she was known as kind and caring, alcohol sometimes led to fights and trouble with the law. Amber also experienced a pattern of unhealthy relationships. Her family says that because of her trauma, insecurities, and substance abuse, she often became involved with men who were also abusive. One man Amber dated was a man named Mike, and he had an extensive criminal history, and the relationship was extremely volatile to the point where family members said that Amber was afraid of him. While they were together, Mike went to prison, and Amber was able to separate herself from the relationship and regain stability. She stopped drinking and working hard to turn her life around. She also found work as a live-in aide helping elderly individuals and people with disabilities. She was extremely passionate about her job and often brought crafts to do with her clients. For a period of time, Amber was doing well. That changed in 2020 when her father, who had been released from prison, was killed while living in a homeless encampment. According to her family, this loss deeply affected Amber. She began to withdraw from her loved ones and started spending time with people who were not a positive influence. After seeing how hard she had worked to rebuild her life, it was difficult for her family to watch her struggle again. In 2022, things worsened when Mike was released from prison. He moved in with Amber at the adult foster care where she was living and working. Amber's family was immediately concerned about what would happen, and they were right to be worried. In September of 2022, Michigan State Police and the U.S. Marshals surrounded the facility to arrest Mike for parole violations and the sale of methamphetamine. Authorities had reportedly been watching the home for many weeks and believed that Mike was dealing drugs out of the facility. When police entered the home, they found a large amount of marijuana and methamphetamine. However, Mike wasn't there. Investigators asked Amber for assistance in locating him, but she refused. She was too loyal to Mike to give them any information. Amber was then charged with possession of a controlled substance and taken into custody. She was released with a personal recognizance bond and a court date that was set for July 13th, 2023. And I do want to mention here that Mike was eventually located as well, and he was arrested, but he was kept behind bars for violating his parole. As a result of Amber and Mike's arrests, the adult foster care facility was shut down. Amber lost both her job and her housing, and she didn't have anywhere to live, so she started couch surfing again, and this was not a good situation. Now, Marty did explain to us that she would allow Amber to come by her place and shower or eat, but she didn't allow her to live there. Marty didn't trust the people that Amber was associated with, so essentially she couldn't trust Amber to stay with her. Marty said it was extremely difficult to say no to Amber and watch her go through this, but she also had to protect herself. I'm not going to get into too many details here. I haven't directly personally experienced this, but I know many people that I'm close to who have. And it's difficult. As you get older and your kids get older, there does come a point where, as adults, they have to make their own decisions, and you can't allow those decisions to affect you. You're still living your own life. And we have seen cases where not being able to say no could put you or the other people you care about in danger. So this is a tough situation, and there's no book on it. You have to make your own judgment, and nobody knows their kids better than their parents. So I have to go with Marty on this one. I'm not going to judge her for it. Like I said, I've seen this before, not only in my personal life, but in my professional life. And so I'm sure there are parts where Marty says, what if? But I'm here to tell you, Marty, and we're going to talk about this more throughout the episode. If it wasn't this occasion, it would have been another occasion down the road. So you did nothing wrong here. You were trying to help your daughter in the best way you could by not enabling her and also protecting yourself. So I think most people are going to be able to understand where you were coming from. By June of 2023, Amber was about a month away from her court date. By this point, Amber seemed to be getting back on track and making more positive choices. She was really focused on her upcoming court case and was ready to face the consequences for what had happened. Unfortunately, she would never make it to court. And there's so much more to this story. There's going to be some people we're going to discuss who are potentially involved, and some evidence that may indicate what happened to Amber. We're going to talk about it after the break. You know, sometimes you just need a reset, not just mentally, but physically as well. And for me, nothing helps more than starting fresh in a clean, organized space. For my OCD, it's a miracle worker. It just completely changes my headspace. And between work, family, and new projects, my schedule is pretty packed. So outsourcing home cleaning has been, honestly, a game changer. And that's where HomeAglow comes in. HomeAglow is a top-rated home service platform dedicated to making your space clean and tidy, and they make it ridiculously easy to book a professional cleaner online. Whether you're getting ready for visitors, just trying to freshen up a space, or trying to stay on top of life, they've got you covered. And it's very simple to use. You go to their website, you pick a day and time you want, you choose how long you need the cleaning for, and you're matched with a certified cleaner. And you even get to see photos and reviews of their background check cleaners before booking, which makes the whole process feel safe and stress-free. And I have to say, walking into a clean home, it instantly boosts my productivity and my mood. It frees up my time to focus on bigger goals instead of having to worry about the everyday chores. And having someone come in who can do the job just as good, if not better than me, that's a win. Now, quick disclosure, if you haven't figured it out already, this episode is sponsored by HomeAglow. And one of the best parts is their Forever Clean membership, which saves you $30 an hour on all future cleanings. You can book unlimited cleaning starting at just $19 an hour, and everything is backed with HomeAglow's happiness guarantee. Plus, 100% of the cleaning fees and tips go directly to your cleaner, so you're also supporting people in your community. Now, just a heads up, unfortunately, HomeAglow services are only available in the U.S. right now, but if you're ready to take home cleaning off your plate, this is the time to do it. Head over to homeaglow.com/detective to get your first 3 hours of cleaning for only $19. That's HomeAglow.com/detective. Okay, so we're back, and on June 23rd, Amber messaged Marty and asked if she could come home for a couple of days. She said it wasn't safe for her to stay where she was, but she didn't explain what was actually going on. When Amber said this, Marty wasn't immediately alarmed because Amber had made similar statements in the past in the hopes of staying with her, so Marty thought it might just be another one of those situations. So she told Amber that she was out of town currently, but would be back late the following day on June 24th, and that Amber could come over then. Marty returned home on the 24th, but she didn't hear from Amber, and at the time, she assumed that maybe Amber had figured something else out and no longer needed her help. So at this point, it didn't seem unusual yet. As the days passed, that started to change. When a week went by without hearing from Amber, Marty reached out to her, but she didn't hear back. That immediately raised concern. Amber had never gone that long without contacting her, no matter what was going on in her life. Marty began reaching out to family members and friends, trying to figure out if anyone had heard from Amber, but no one had. So at this point, Marty contacted the police to report 39-year-old Amber missing, but they did not take a report or send an officer to speak with her. She continued calling, asking for help, but nothing happened. The Lansing police didn't seem concerned at all that Amber was missing, and Marty believes that was because Amber had a criminal history and a transient background. So they just kept putting it off like Amber would be back soon, and eventually she would turn up. And unfortunately, I agree with Marty. That's exactly what happened, in my opinion. They probably had known of Amber from some past mistakes. Maybe they didn't always result in an arrest. And they thought, you know what? We know the people she hangs out with. She's going to turn up eventually. We're not wasting our time and manpower. And shame on them, because that's not your job. When someone reports someone missing and it appears to be valid, it's your obligation to take that report, regardless of you think of the person who is currently missing. Yes, she's 39 years old, but once she's been missing for longer than 24 hours, you take the report, you put her into NCIC, you put out a BOLO, and you hope that someone sees her and says, hey, you know what? False alarm, we got her. But by not doing that, even if she was located, even if she did have contact with another law enforcement agency, you wouldn't know because you didn't take the report. It's unprofessional, and I don't respect it at all. Period. And no surprise to you guys, or I wouldn't be covering this case right now, even though the Lansing Police Department thought she was fine and she would eventually show back up, she never did. And on July 13th, she missed her court date, which we all know she was really looking forward to. She wanted to get in there, face her consequences, and move on with her life. And to Marty, this was just another clear sign that something was seriously wrong. Amber had been very open about how important that date was to her. She had talked about it often and was preparing for it. And Marty said Amber would not have missed it unless she was unable to attend for reasons outside her control. And if you weren't already pissed off at the Lansing Police Department, Marty had to call them 6 times over a 2.5-week period before a detective was sent out to take a report. And after this, Marty believed the case would finally move forward, but instead, the detective took some time off for personal reasons and no investigative steps were taken. Again, another mistake. First off, the fact that she had to call 6 additional times, unacceptable, and the fact that the case wasn't passed on to someone else while this detective took his leave, or her leave. I don't know if it was a male or female. Now, I have no issue with an investigator taking time off for personal reasons. I have no clue what was going on in their life, and it may have been warranted. However, it is a common practice that if investigators have active cases, especially cases that are timely, you have to notify your superior officer, and that case will be reassigned to another detective so that they can continue on your work. That's a common practice. It happens all the time. But what I think happened here was because of this case and the priority that was put on it, this detective threw this folder in a file somewhere in, or on a shelf and said, I'll get to it when I get back. And more than likely when I do, Amber will already be removed from the system. She'll have already been located and she'll be fine. It's a mistake. This is a missing person. Minutes, hours, days can be the difference between life and death. These investigators know that this was not the way to handle it. So finally, on August 7th, the police alerted the public about Amber's disappearance by posting a missing person alert on Facebook. Around that same time, detectives told Marty that they would speak with Amber's friends and visit the places she had recently stayed. But, according to Marty, for months, none of that happened. So, Marty began trying to piece things together herself. Through her own investigation, she learned that Amber was last heard from on June 25th, 2 days after Marty last spoke with her. That day, Amber went with a friend to a dollar store on South MLK Boulevard in Lansing. Later that evening, at around 9 p.m., the same friend dropped Amber off at a house in Lansing where she had been staying. This house was owned by an elderly gentleman who Amber sometimes cared for. Multiple people lived in the house with the man and the detached garage behind the house. So after being dropped off at this house, Amber sent a text message to someone who lived there saying that she was at the front gate and needed to be let in. Amber was never seen or heard from again. After hearing that Amber was last seen at this house, Marty decided to look into the people who were living there, and she learned about a man who lived in the garage. I'm going to refer to this man as Patrick, even though Amber's family does know his real name, but it hasn't been released by police, so I'm going to use this fake name to protect the integrity of the investigation. Marty asked around and found out that Amber had previously told people that she was afraid of Patrick and that she didn't want to stay at the house. She didn't feel safe, just to put it bluntly, and she made plans to stay with a mutual friend named Lena, but that didn't work out, so Amber was forced to continue staying with Patrick. As Marty learned all this information, she shared it with investigators, urging them to take Amber's disappearance seriously, but nothing was done until November. By then, nearly 5 months had been lost. During that time, Patrick had moved out of the garage where Amber was last known to be staying, and in addition to that, much of Amber's phone data was no longer available. You see, she had been using a prepaid phone, which was shut off in July, limiting what could be recovered from the records. However, there was one key piece of evidence that did remain, and that was the surveillance footage from the dollar store, which showed Amber shopping with her friend on June 25th. Unfortunately, that is the last confirmed sighting of Amber that detectives can point to, and while they are aware of the text message that Amber sent while at Patrick's gate later that night around 9 p.m., they do not consider that message proof of where she was last seen. And I get that. I've criticized them a lot in this case, and rightfully so, but there is a possibility that if it's looking like what happened didn't happen, she may have used her phone, she may have went inside, she may have encountered someone else, or she may have encountered someone later that evening or the next morning upon leaving. And just because we don't have digital proof of it, it doesn't mean it didn't happen. So you can look at it, you can speculate, you can call it for what it is, which is facts, but it's not concrete evidence that just because that was the last message she sent, that's the last confirmed sighting. It could be that the person who saw her later, maybe outside that location, just hasn't come forward yet. So again, I can criticize a lot of what Lansing has done, and I will continue to do that in this episode. But from an investigative point of view, I also agree that this is a crucial piece of information, but it does not solidify the fact that, yes, whatever happened to Amber happened right after this. There could be more to this story. I also want to point out that we are basing some of this off her friend who was seen with her at the dollar store. Yes, they said they dropped her off, and yes, we do have a text message from Amber going to someone inside that home. However, where I'm sitting from, I do wonder, did this friend actually drop her off, or did they go inside with her? These are questions that I don't have the answers to, but if I was investigating this case, that's something I would be asking. Marty told us, aside from recovering the surveillance footage, she does not believe law enforcement conducted a thorough investigation into Amber's disappearance. For example, despite the fact that Amber was dropped off at Patrick's home, police did not speak with him until roughly a year and a half into the investigation. I can't make it up. And I really hope that Marty's wrong about that. But regardless, Marty, I completely agree with you. They did not thoroughly investigate your daughter's disappearance. And you might think at this point, Marty would just pack it up and go home because clearly law enforcement isn't going to help her. But that's not Marty. So because of the lack of movement, Marty continued investigating on her own. She contacted person after person, following up on any lead that came her way. And during those conversations, Marty was told that people connected to Patrick's home were involved in drug trafficking, and that Patrick himself had been linked to other disappearances, and that many people were afraid of him. Marty was also told that people within that circle believed Amber was a snitch, and she isn't sure what Amber would have snitched on them about, because most of the things that Amber was involved in, specifically Mike's charges, had nothing to do with anybody in Patrick's home. However, Marty did let us know that she had heard claims that Amber may have witnessed human trafficking, drug trafficking, or gun trafficking at Patrick's house, and that was what people believe she might snitch on. So Marty does not know whether any of these claims are true. These are just things that she's been told, so she relayed them to us, and she also relayed them to law enforcement. And just like a lot of the investigations I've conducted over the years, Marty explained that she heard a lot of things from a lot of people, and sometimes it was difficult to sift through what was fact and what was fiction. And I can tell you right now, ain't that the truth? It's one of the biggest hurdles we face in investigations. It's not only about gathering information, it's about trying to figure out what's actually true. Because if you start going down a path based on misinformation, you could spend hours, if not days, if not weeks, investigating something that has nothing to do with what actually happened. And that's the demoralizing aspect of doing a criminal investigation. Sometimes you don't know until you go all the way down this path and get to that dead end and then realize, yep, nope, they were definitely wrong. That's not accurate. And then you got to go all the way back to the beginning. So as far as Amber's case is concerned and the allegations surrounding this house and how it may be a potential motive for what happened to Amber, as I sit here right now, Marty isn't exactly sure what was going on in that house, if anything at all. However, almost all the tips she has received lead back to that house and something happening to Amber inside of it. We still have more to cover. We're going to talk about it right after this break. Cravings aren't just about nicotine. They're about habit, the hand-to-mouth motion, oral fixation, the momentary pause, and when that loop is broken, cravings spike, and Fume replaces your habit with a flavored air fidget device that gives your hands and mouth something to do, distracting cravings without nicotine, vapor, or batteries. So don't just quit. Upgrade that habit loop and reach for Fume instead. Fume is a flavored air device designed to help people quit smoking or vaping by breaking that hand-to-mouth pattern. Again, no nicotine, no batteries, no vapor, just clean, natural flavors and a fidget-friendly design that actually feels good to use. I've told you guys before, I keep my Fume in the office all the time. And honestly, half the time, I just grab it to fidget with. I always like to have something in my hand when I'm working, and I really like the weight, I like the look, and yeah, I do like the taste, and my favorite flavor still, even after all this time, is orange vanilla. And listen, we're well into February, we know how it goes. The first month when it comes to resolutions, you're okay. And then by month 2 and 3, your brain starts negotiating with you. And if you're trying to quit smoking or quit vaping, you're looking for something to replace that motion and that routine. And that's where Fume can really help without falling into that old pattern. And as I just said, I like orange vanilla, but they also have crisp mint and they also have raspberry, which I just recently tried. And it's really, really good. And if you're looking to give Fume a try, I strongly recommend their Journey Pack. And I'm going to sweeten the deal because if you grab their Journey Pack, they'll also send you a free gift just for using my code DETECTIVE. And Fume has already helped over 700,000 people take steps toward better habits, and now it's your turn. So use my code DETECTIVE to get a free gift with your Journey Pack. All you have to do is head over to tryfume.com, that's TryFume.com, and use my code DETECTIVE to claim your free gift today. Ever wake up sweaty, freezing, or just uncomfortable? The temperature in your bedroom can make or break your sleep. That's why I switched to Miracle Made Sheets. They're inspired by NASA technology and use silver-infused, temperature-regulating fabric to help you sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. So if you're a hot sleeper, cold sleeper, it doesn't matter. These sheets will help keep you in your comfort zone so you can sleep through the night. And thanks to their antibacterial silver technology, Miracle Made sheets stay cleaner and fresher up to 3 times longer than regular sheets. That means fewer odors, fewer wash cycles, and way less laundry. And the most important part, especially when we're talking about sheets that you're going to be sleeping on, they feel just as good, if not better, than sheets that I've slept on in five-star hotels, but without the high price tag. So they're smooth, they're breathable, and they're extremely comfortable. And they're great for your skin. All that hidden bacteria in regular sheets, it can clog your pores and it can cause breakouts, and I don't think any of us want that. But with Miracle Made's antibacterial design, it helps you sleep cleaner and clearer night after night. So upgrade your sleep or give the gift of better rest by going to trymiracle.com/detective to try Miracle Made sheets today. You'll save over 40%, and when you use my promo code DETECTIVE, you'll get an extra 20% off and a free three-piece towel set. They make an amazing gift, and with their 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no risk. That's trymiracle.com/detective, promo code DETECTIVE at checkout. Thanks to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode. Okay, we're back, and like I said a few minutes ago, Marty received a lot of information, but it always led back to Patrick's house. As she continued digging, she was provided with two audio recordings made after Amber's disappearance in which Patrick is heard discussing Amber. Both recordings are poor quality and difficult to make out, but both include references to Amber being a snitch. In one of the recordings, Patrick is heard implying that Amber was a rat. In the second recording, Patrick is speaking with another man and tells him that he, quote, took care of Amber to help him because Amber was going to snitch. According to Marty, the other man responds by saying he doesn't think Amber would have snitched and that he does not need Patrick to take care of anything. Marty told us that she has never found any evidence that Amber was actually a snitch, and based on what she knows about her daughter, she does not believe Amber would have turned on anyone. As I've said throughout this episode, Amber was known for being loyal to people in her life, sometimes to her own detriment. But listen, I will say this. What we're talking about here is a real thing. I was in the Special Investigations Unit for 6 years, and we focused on drugs, guns, and gangs. And snitches being in jeopardy, if they're believed to be snitches, can be a real problem. Sometimes it's not even true. Just the allegation of it can result in someone being hurt or killed. So this was something that, with our confidential informants, we were always very concerned about. And it was a top priority for me to make sure that, yeah, we got the bad guys, but most importantly, the people that were helping us were protected. And I'm happy to sit here in front of you guys and tell you publicly that in my entire career, I never exposed a single person who was an informant for us. In fact, I actually lost cases where, for one reason or another, a judge basically said to me, hey, Derek, we have to know who your source is or the case isn't going forward. And in every one of those circumstances, I dropped the case. Getting that arrest, getting that conviction was less important than protecting the people that were working for me. And I always stuck by that methodology, and it worked out for me as my career progressed forward. So as Marty continued searching for answers, she began speaking with more people connected to the area where Amber had last been staying. During those conversations, multiple individuals, including the homeowner's son, told her that Amber had been murdered. According to what Marty was told, Amber had been killed, dismembered with a saw, and buried in the woods located a half a block from Patrick's home. Marty was also told that Amber's clothes were then burned. Desperate for answers, Marty began searching the wooded area herself. She returned again and again, using a shovel, hoping she might find something, and at the same time, hoping she wouldn't. Fortunately, or unfortunately, however you want to look at it, she never did. For me personally, I'm glad that she didn't, although I've spoken with many parents, and a lot of them would push back on that and say, Derek, as traumatic as that would be, I would rather have answers. So I have to go with them because they would know more than I ever would, and they can speak to that directly, and I am in a fortunate position where I can't. So as she was out there digging, I'm sure Marty was saying, listen, if this is meant to be, as horrific as this might be, at least I'll be able to bring my daughter home. Now, what was interesting is clearly Marty had a lot of sources that she was talking to, and she was later told that because she had been focusing on that area, Amber's remains were moved and placed into the water. Marty shared all of this information with law enforcement, every lead, every statement, every rumor, even the ones she wasn't sure were accurate. It was always passed along. But according to Marty, investigators are often skeptical of information coming from people who knew Amber, viewing them as unreliable witnesses due to drug use or criminal histories. Marty said that police rarely followed up with the individuals she identified, even when those people claimed to have direct knowledge of what happened to Amber. And for Marty, this has been one of the most difficult and frustrating aspects of this case. These are the only leads that exist, and yet she feels they have not been fully explored. And I can't imagine what that's like, to know that the only entity that can help you doesn't want to be bothered, and that this regular citizen who doesn't have an investigative background is being forced to work this case alone, from not only interviewing witnesses to out there in the woods digging with a shovel for their own daughter. It's unacceptable. I get really frustrated about this. I'm going to reel it back in. I can only say it so many times. Shame on you, Lansing Police Department, from the person investigating this to the person in charge of this unit. I don't care what the excuse is, unless Marty's completely lying to us, and I don't believe she is. This is one of the worst examples I have from law enforcement just completely being inept and not doing their job. All I can say is I'm sorry. Even though I had nothing to do with this case, on behalf of that police department, I'm so sorry that Marty had to experience this and that she's still experiencing it. And any good police officer who's listening or watching this right now is not going to disagree with me. So today, Amber is still missing and her disappearance is still considered an open case. However, according to Marty, detectives are not actively investigating. Instead, it has largely fallen on her to gather information on her own and then pass it along to law enforcement for follow-up if they even choose to do that. Because of these ridiculous circumstances, Marty has continued conducting her own investigation, and based on everything she's learned, she believes something happened to Amber when she entered that gated property where she had been staying. She doesn't know exactly what occurred, but she believes foul play was involved. Marty knows that Amber did not just simply walk away. She doesn't believe her daughter would or could have disappeared on her own. Something happened to Amber, and she deserves to be found. She knows that there were several people at the house that night, and it's unclear whether they were directly involved in what had happened to Amber, but she believes they know what happened. She also believes others in the community may have information, but are afraid or unwilling to speak up. Marty wants those people to know it's not too late to help Amber's case, and there are ways to share information without revealing their identity. They can use the anonymous tip line, which I will share at the end of this episode. Marty told us that she still has hope someone will come forward and provide her with the answers she's been searching for. She wants to bring Amber home, give her a proper resting place, and help her one last time. Until that happens, Marty will not stop searching. She will continue investigating on her own, making sure everyone knows Amber's story, no matter how long it takes. All right, let's dive into this perspective, and I want to elaborate on some of the things I said and also talk about a couple theories. The first one being the last point we know of, which is Amber outside that gated property sending a text message. Let's just be honest. We don't know if she ever entered the property. So let's explore that. So we're talking about an area that potentially is known for drug activity, human trafficking, gun trafficking. And with those crimes, bad people are going to gravitate toward that area. Some of them may be connected to that house. Some of them may just be around the area in another house. So I bring that up to you because is it possible Amber, while standing outside that gate, encountered a nefarious individual, someone who may have been at a house next door or may have been driving by or may have even been someone that she had seen in the past and maybe had some brief interactions with, or someone that she knew pretty well, an acquaintance? Is it possible that even though Amber sent that text message before anyone came outside, Amber was taken by someone else or voluntarily went with someone, saying to herself, hey, you know what? I've told people I don't want to stay with Patrick. Here's so-and-so. They're offering that I can go with them. So she decided to do so. And when this person eventually came outside to let her in through the gate, Amber was already gone. We don't have that information because law enforcement has never shared it with us, if they've even looked into that at all. But that would be a question, right? Whoever Amber sent that text message to, the follow-up question would simply be, did you go out to the gate? And when you did, was Amber there? Now, they could lie to you, but it's a jumping-off point. It's an opportunity to take that information, cross-reference it with other things you know to see if they're lying. And then if you find out that they are, now you have to ask yourself why. But we don't know. I'm sitting on the outside looking in. That would be one of the top questions for me. Can we put Amber inside the home after that text message? If we can't, we have to explore the possibility that someone outside of the home could also be responsible for whatever happened to Amber, which would involve detectives getting off their ass, going to the surrounding houses, gathering names of individuals in the area during that time, and seeing what their criminal histories are. Now, years later, it's going to be tough to do that, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't try. You go back there, you see who was living there at the time, you track them down, you talk to them, you vet them, and see if their stories align. The next theory that we have to talk about is that potentially she did go inside. She texted someone, they came out, they let her in. Did she spend the night and then get up the next morning and leave that property? And if she did, where did she go and who was she with? And this goes right back to theory one, right? It could have been a neighbor. It could have been an acquaintance. It could have been a vehicle. There's a lot of opportunity here that she could have been picked up by someone or met up with someone. And as I mentioned in the episode, and this is one of the few pieces that I actually agree with law enforcement on, just because that text message was the last thing we have, it doesn't mean that that was the last time she was seen alive. There could be 12 to 24 hours where people who saw her, who spoke with her, who interacted with her, could narrow down the window in which whatever happened to her occurred. And again, that would involve doing your job, going out there, seeing who she was involved with, seeing who was in that area, thinking about other criminals who could have been in the area on the day in question, and going in, you know, doing your job, interviewing them, seeing what they know, pound the pavement a little bit, put some pressure on some people, you know, cop stuff. The third scenario I want to talk about, and I'm not going to spend too much time on it because I don't necessarily believe it's what happened, is that even though Amber had told people she was looking forward to getting this court case underway, maybe she got cold feet. Maybe after spending the night at Patrick's, realizing that this court date was coming up relatively soon, she had talked to some people about getting out of Michigan altogether, and that's what she did. She didn't let anybody know what was going on. Maybe she was frustrated with Marty because Marty said she couldn't come over that night, and she decided, I want a fresh new start. I'm hanging around with bad people here. I'm making the wrong decisions. I don't want to go to prison. The only way I'm ever going to be able to become who I truly want to be is to remove myself from the situation entirely. And listen, although that doesn't seem likely, I hope that's what happened. I hope that she's out there somewhere right now in a different part of the country with new friends and a job, and she's doing well. I think that would be amazing to find that out. My question would be, why not reach out to Marty? Why not let her know you're okay? What harm would that do? So because she hasn't done that, that's why I have a hard time believing this scenario. Yeah, is she on the run, I guess, for this court case? Sure. You can send a call. You can send a postcard. Let your loved ones know that you're okay and they don't need to worry. That's it. And if that had been done, do I think Marty would be sharing that with us? Probably not. I know I wouldn't as a parent. But she wouldn't be out here screaming from the rooftops looking for help. Which leads us to the final theory I want to discuss, is that Amber did show up at that house that night. She did text someone saying, I need to be let inside. And eventually that's what happened. She went into that house. Maybe there was a brief conversation. Maybe there was an argument. Who knows? But based on what evidence Marty has gathered, it appears that at least a few people felt like Amber was a liability. And for whatever reason, unknown to us, they decided to remove her to avoid the possibility that she could turn them in. And I'm not just speculating on that. I will tell you, I haven't heard the audio recordings, but if they're accurate and you have Patrick on audio, basically confessing to committing a crime, you have to believe it. Why would he say it if that were not the case? And so I'm left here wondering what happened inside that household and who else was there. That's almost more important, because if there were more people at that residence, the level of liability is not the same for everyone involved. There's going to be one or two main people who were directly connected to it. And then there's going to be some outsiders, maybe people who witnessed things or heard things or may have driven a car or something much more minor. Those are the people we have to identify. Because even though they have lesser involvement, if implicated in this crime, they can lose the same amount. If they're hit with a conspiracy charge, even if they just brought the shovel, they could be charged with murder. And they need to know that. Doesn't matter how complicit you were in this crime, if we find out that you were part of it at all, you could be serving the same amount of time as the person who actually killed her. Now, on the other hand, as Marty said, there's still time to do the right thing. If you come forward and you help solve this case and you help us identify the person or people responsible and you lead us to where Amber currently is, you could come out of this on the right side and not do any prison time. Or if you're someone who's in that community and maybe you know of someone who was in that house and maybe they told you something that could lead us to Amber, you too can help solve this case and give Marty the answers she deserves. So for anybody who fits those categories or is just from that community, I want to give you a quick recap. 39-year-old Amber Arnett was last seen on June 25th, 2003 in Lansing, Michigan, after being dropped off at a gated property where she had been staying. She has never been found. Her disappearance remains an open case, and no arrests have ever been made, so what truly happened to Amber remains unknown. Anyone with information is asked to contact Crime Stoppers at 517-483-7867. Again, that's 517-483-STOP. A private reward is available. My final words, as always, go out to the friends and family of Amber, specifically Marty. Thank you for allowing me to share your daughter's story. I hope I did it justice. And for also giving us some insight into what you've experienced over the last almost 3 years and the trials and tribulations that you've had to overcome, specifically involving law enforcement. I can't apologize enough that you are going through this continually. And I'm really hoping that by me shedding a light on it, maybe someone will do the right thing and get in contact with you. Again, this case is still open and there's time to do the right thing. However, we're not going to rely on that. This is our community that we're building and we're all behind you. And the one thing I know about being a former detective is that sometimes people aren't willing to come forward just to do the right thing. They have to be incentivized. So how do we do that? Usually it's money. So I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. And if someone comes forward and provides information that leads to the arrest and conviction of the people or the person responsible for what happened to Amber, I'm going to give you $5,000. All you got to do is pick up the phone, make the call, give us the information we need to identify these individuals, and more importantly, find Amber. I really hope that happens sooner than later. It's gone on too long at this point. I want to be able to sit right here and let all of you know that one way or another, Marty has been reunited with Amber, and that the person who's responsible for whatever happened is behind bars. Until that day comes, everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you soon.